As Helen is often telling me that I cannot invent new words. Well, I have invented a new word, theatheology. And theatheology is an attempt to come to terms with my own spiritual pilgrimage as a Unitarian Universalist and previous, but more formally coming into the Unitarian Universalist community in 1996 after leaving a faith tradition that I had determined for me simply spoke too negatively about people for who they are too often, and my own sense of tolerance or intolerance, as this case may be, I needed to leave for my own emotional health. But in my... Is that better? Okay. In my coming to Unitarian Universalists, I came from certainly a theologically bound system, a system that would acknowledge God and salvation through Jesus, and there was no other way. Coming into the Unitarian Universal circles, I had the freedom to not just inwardly struggle with that, but to outwardly struggle with that, to the point of even letting that go, and to have no theological belief, but to have my own spiritual struggle and community struggles, and that be okay in the church that I entered. That be perfectly welcomed. And I had always appreciated that. But on the same token, what I bumped into was not necessarily a community that was welcoming of the struggle between those who believed in a god or goddesses and those who did not believe in God, but more were more atheistic in their belief than agnostic. Rather than that being a friendly conversation and struggle of one's spiritual pilgrimage, I often found that to be a difficult time in Unitarian Universal circles. And even looking and reading some of the history since the 1860s, have found that in the history of Unitarian Universalism, this very argument has been an argument that has split congregations and even split the denomination at times. So it has not been an easy pilgrimage, trying to hold a faith pilgrimage for a community, trying to hold together people of various beliefs in the same house. Even in our own community, we might say that in this direction lies a church that has this flavoring, in this direction has a church that has this flavoring, in this direction has a church that has this flavoring, and could we all get into under the same roof on a regular basis? Maybe, maybe not. And yet we say, or our church has, and especially I noticed it in the spring, that we want to attend to our spiritual side. Of course, then there are some that are saying there is no such thing as spirituality. So then you have another whole argument. In the next couple weeks, I'd like to discuss and open up for thought and for our spiritual journey the possibility that those categories are false. That the categories of agnostic atheism, theology, theist, they're not false in the sense of lies. They're not false in a sense of bad or negative. But they're options of what it means to be human and how we struggle in this world. And unfortunately, we may cling to these options and belief system structures tightly, which then may cause some intolerance for others. But as we are as human beings, and I hope in the next couple of weeks at least present the idea that's worth having a conversation, that indeed we are more than any particular belief system, and we choose belief systems in order to figure out how to be in this world and operate in this world. And I think that's kind of the foundation and direction I want to go in. And I want to take three perspectives to try to help us have that conversation. One from a philosophical science perspective, where there's a philosopher working to integrate and understand through, in a way, a philosophical lens, neuroscience, the science of the brain, the latest science we have on how the brain works and what the brain is, and an understanding of that, and a psychological perspective and a religious perspective. Yesterday, we at the church, we held a seminar or a workshop of sorts that we called the Detachment Wheel, and it was birthed out of one of the board members saying, you know, we're talking about spiritual exercises from the pulpit, we're hearing that, but what are the methods? And what are the practices? And so I took that to heart and said, well, okay, so yesterday we had one of those methods and we called it the Detachment Wheel. But my point is, with bringing that up at this point, when we engage in the process of looking for truth and trying to understand truth, when we engage in a process of saying we want to grow spiritually and we want to have more of a spiritual life, you know, often I think when I hear people say that and I talk to them, that we want to experience more light, we want to experience more enjoyment, we want to experience a kinder way of existence, which, yes, we do. But then I often wonder, what do we make of the books that when people say they want to go on a spiritual journey and we start looking at spiritual bibliographies and we look at The Dark Night of the Soul? Where are we going spiritually? Or we hear the term winter spirituality. Or we hear the thought, you got to go through hell before you get to heaven when you take a spiritual journey. And I'm often ponder when I look at, I do counseling often during the week, and when I go to websites and look at other counselors and how they describe themselves, they say, if you're going to take this pilgrimage, if you're going to go on this therapeutic journey, you can expect this ride to be difficult. You may at first experience more anxiety. You may at first experience some sense of depression. And these journeys of growth and these journeys of transformation aren't marked with all joy and light. And some discovered yesterday in the Detachment Wheel that where they ended up was not all pleasant. It was some confusion. Some sense of what am I attached to that I think was good? Is that really good for me? And there was some questions about what is this spiritual journey about? And I think another model that's helpful to understand is the model found in the Torah, the Christian Old Testament, the story of Moses. And in the story of Moses, I don't know how many of you are familiar with the story of Moses. Moses was tending sheep and having a good life up in the hills and enjoying himself quite a bit, having escaped possibly an accusation of murder in the city in Egypt where the Pharaoh lived. And Moses, follower of his understanding of God, comes across this burning bush. But yet, the bush is not burning. And so how are we to understand that as persons thinking, because we know if there's a fire, it needs oxygen, something's going to burn, it needs fuel. So this is not a literal event. It can't be understood literally. Okay, so this bush is burning, and some people make different symbolic understanding of that. And what I noticed about this particular story was that as Moses approached this burning bush that was not burning, that which is not, kind of a spiritual frame, that he heard this voice, take off your sandals. And so I thought about, well, what does that mean to take off your shoes, to take off your sandals? I don't know how many of you have ever heard the saying, if you want to know how successful a man is, look at his shoes. You know, and what does shoes mean? What does sandals mean? And I'm certainly not going to say that women collect shoes and shoes have importance to that and every occasion, every color. But there's something to that, isn't there? So what is... I didn't mean to start any fights. Sorry. What does this mean that Moses is approaching his, this fire, his understanding of the divine? And as he's approaching his experience of this divine encounter, he hears the word, take off your shoes. And so what comes to my mind from that is goes like this. Take off your sandals. Leave your world behind. Come and tell me who you are. Tell your mother, your father, they cannot come with you. Tell your brother, your sister, they cannot come with you. Tell your baseball coach, your volleyball coach, they cannot come with you. You and you alone must come. Through your created worlds, through your hell, through your heaven, through gods and demons, through all the selves you have been, are, and will become, you must leave them behind. Leave all of you behind. They will all burn away in my fire. Come and be what you are and have never been. I have something for you to do. I wonder, when we talk about a spiritual journey, if sometimes our fear isn't that there's something for us to do that we're not doing. I have something for you to do. All of you will be burnt away in this fire, in this passion. We practiced the detachment wheel yesterday, and I think one of the common themes was that if I'm not attached to these things, to these ideas, to these thoughts, to this belief, to these belief systems, to these relationships, if these attachments can be detached from, if these attachments can be reversed, then who am I? And what am I to be in this world? And what am I to do in this world? What Moses was being prepared for in his theology and his spirituality, what he was being prepared for was to be the voice of a people that were crying because they were being economically and in a sense laborly, in labor, they were being oppressed. And when his world was burned away, and when his story was burned away, and when his sense of identity was burned away, he saw more clearly an oppressed people and was motivated in a cleaner, clearer state and was motivated to say, this oppression is not okay. The first labor voice, maybe, in history. This was not okay to oppress these people and you need to set them free. Is it that when we clear house, is it that when we burn our stories away and we let go of our attachments of this world and we begin to ask ourselves, who are we and what are we to do? Do we confront that there is something for us to do? It might not be how I have organized my life. I mean, if you read the rest of that story, for two chapters, Moses is whining and crying. I'm not good enough. I can't do this. I don't have a voice. I mean, he's just avoiding what he knows he needs to do. And do we find ourselves there? Another words from Meister Eckhart, a Catholic mystic, spiritual, really, when you read people on mystics and spirituality today. This is one of the most often quoted persons, and this is his experience, similar to Moses, but his experience of experiencing that sense of light and that sense of divine that is not necessarily about an external God, but that sense of light and that sense of divine that is within all of us. When we hear namaste, when we hear the light that is within you, that is what these people are talking about. And he says, when I stood in my first cause, I had no God, and this is a mystic, Catholic, I had no God and was cause of myself. I did not will or desire anything, for I was pure being, a knower of myself by divine truth. Then I wanted myself and nothing else. And what I wanted, I was, and what I was, I wanted, and thus exist untrammeled by God or anything else. He's talking about himself being in a pure sense, not feeling the pressure to be conformed to this world in any particular way, not pressured in this world by his understanding of God to be anything other than who he is. The pureness of who he is, not trampled on by some sense of God that would form him to be something other than who he is. That's not what he experienced. He experienced a pureness of light. But when I parted from my free will and received my created being, then I had a God. From this pure being, from his meditative state, from maybe from when he was totally detached from anything external and even detached from his own mind of anything that he'd consider himself to be beyond belief, to be other than belief, just to be a pure sense of what it means to be human, to be there. When he steps back into the world, he now says, "Ah, there's God." But here, when he's in that sense of pureness, pure being himself, not wanting anything else, not wanting to be anything else, just purely himself, no God, steps out of that purity one step and begins to engage the world, and he says, "Ah, there's God." Now, that God doesn't have any particular nuances at this particular point. No shape, no structure, not male nor female. Not animal, not tree, not earth, not space. Just, there's God. There is the first other than me encounter. And he calls that God. I'm reminded of the Sufi thought where you have not really a dual nature, but there are two aspects to what it means to be human. There is this sense of divine, just like Meister Eckhart's talking about. There's this sense of divine, and then there's this perfect nature, and then the soul. But when you take that and kind of put that with what we'll get to in a minute with the psychological perspective, what Meister Eckhart's talking about is, in my pure self, I am. But when I step out, I begin to see other than me. I begin to see a symbol system. I begin to understand this world. I can begin to put together my identity, a narrative of how this world will be. I can begin to put how I'm going to navigate and operate in this world. I am developing a worldview. I am trying to understand how I'm going to exist in this world. But that's also within him. That's not external either. That is him in his mind putting together how he's going to operate and be in this world. So it's still him. It's still us. When I choose that, if through some way or some form or some interaction, this worldview, this way of living, this understanding, my interpretation of how I'm going to be in this world, whom I'm going to be, what I'm going to believe in, if that gets separated from my pure state, if those two aspects of me get separated and are no longer in dialogue and no longer informing one another, I'm in trouble. I'm in serious trouble. In our culture, usually what happens is this pure state is difficult to get to. It's like yesterday some of us discovered when we let go of our attachments, what we find is a feeling that we don't necessarily like. And if it's intense enough, I'm going back to my attachments because I don't want to feel this feeling I've discovered that is within me. So I'll step out here and I'll separate myself from that, and I'll become who I was with these attachments. Depending upon the difficulty of my story, rather than continue the dialogue, the tough, hard, spiritual dialogue of who I am and how I understand myself with this pure being, of who I am. Because when I step back into the pure being, I let go of how I understand myself. So when I step back into this, and I come back, in a way, I have to reevaluate my sense of self, my existence, who I am, which is difficult. I can remember the first time I was in therapy and somebody said to me, "Well, you're rather indirect with your anger, aren't you?" And I went, "No, I'm not indirect with my anger. What are you talking about?" Because that statement is a window into my history at that point in time, that something went on within my life that moved me to be a person, to have my identity structured by the dynamic of being indirect with my anger. But I don't want to look at that. And if somebody says, "Well, I wonder how come that is that way," naturally I'm going to say, "It's not that way, so it's not that way, so we don't have to have this conversation." So it took a few times to get there. And a few demonstrations of how I was indirect with my anger always helped. Oh, there it is, right? How can you argue with that? You're angry about this, but you're saying something maybe not so kind to this person over here. But you're really angry at this person. Or you're angry at this person, and you're giving a symbol to the guy that just cut you off in a car, right? Whom you don't know. But they're getting, right, indirect anger. But then that opens up a window to somewhere in my life where anger was coming toward me and I could not be direct with that anger because of a power imbalance, a power dynamic, that if I came back to be direct with my anger, I'd get it worse. So you learn to be indirect with your anger, right? That's how that works. Okay. So my truest self, my purest being, in order for me to get back to that being, that pure being that Eckhart's talking about, in order for me to get back to that, I've got to go through that part of my history of where I learned to be indirect with my anger to step back in that. I've got to go through my hells to get to my heaven. Through despair to get home. This is a spiritual process. And then when I get back here, I let go of my beliefs. So if my belief is a theological belief like Eckhart, I'm saying back here there is no God. So if my belief's an atheistic belief, when I get back here and I have this experience of my pure being, this experience of pure being is not about atheism, it's not about theism, it's not about anything except what it means to be human and how I construct myself to be human. I step back and I let that go. So what that means is that I choose to be agnostic, to be atheist. I choose to be theist for a particular reason. And that reason is how I'm going to get along, how I'm going to operate, and how I'm going to be in the environmental context in which I find myself. Hopefully it's free enough that I can wrestle with these beliefs, that I can move back and forth, and that's okay. And if I have chosen a particular belief system to make my way through this world, there's a reason for that. When I become conscious of why I have chosen the belief system that I have, is a marvelous freeing up process. It is also a moment of crisis, because then I must ask, who am I? I can remember years ago I was working with a spiritual director, and she was Hindu religiously, and at the end we stopped for some reason, and at the end she said, "See yourself above your head. And every day, ask yourself who you are." What? Every day, remake yourself. That means every day I have to detach from myself in order to make myself. from the religious perspective, from the story of Moses, from the words of Eckhart, from that perspective, we bring who we are into the divine fire, and it burns away. And we must redecide who we are going to be in this world and what we are going to be attached to and not attached to. What I've also discovered with that spiritual exercise we did yesterday, not just yesterday, but before, there are times when it's easier to let go of the happier things I'm attached to, of the more pleasant things I'm attached to, and it's more difficult to let go of the hurtful things I'm attached to or the negative things I'm attached to. So the spirituality is about confronting why that is. What's going on with that? That the things that I want to let go of the most, that are hurtful to me, that it's difficult to let go of. How when Moses went to the fire, went to his divine experience of the light, how did he deal with it? How did he let go of that? You know, how are we going to let go of that? How am I going to find myself where there is no God, no belief systems, and be okay with who I am as a human being? And step out into the world and emanate that feeling as opposed to what I might be communicating. That is the religious perspective. And next week we'll do the psychological and science perspective. I find this work difficult at first. I have found it to be so. But eventually, it becomes a way of life. And it is transformative. And those things that we want to let go of, even though they're difficult, can be let go of. And we can change. And we can be different. And we can enjoy this life in a better way. Thank you.